Don't have enough time to stay across all the latest news? ABC News Top Stories podcast explains the biggest breaking news stories and why they matter in less than 2 minutes. So you can hit play and get updated while brushing your teeth or making your lunch. And it's always up to date, ready whenever you're ready to get across the day's news. Just search ABC News Top Stories podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It's 2009, and Donna Cameron, in her late 20s, is sitting on her brown suede lounge in Western Australia.
Just felt completely not real.
She's just received a message from an old friend.
I got a message from Jess saying, "Hey, I noticed you're living in WA. Have you seen this?" And then she sent a clip of the article. And then her next question was, "Do you live anywhere near there?"
The article's got a photo of two men, a young woman and a little girl.
It was the picture where they've all got the dots on their forehead doing this.
I know this photo well. It's a screenshot of a video where the four have red bindis on their foreheads. They're holding their hands in the prayer position and smiling into the camera before saying in unison,
"Namaste."
Donna immediately recognises the young woman. It's an old school friend who she hasn't seen in years, Chantelle McDougall.
Oh my gosh, she has a child? Like, I just remember feeling so shocked that she had a little girl.
The article says the four have disappeared.
It's not something that you plan on hearing about a high school friend. Yeah, I felt uneasy. I felt sick because of the last interaction that we'd had.
For months now, I've been trying to get a clear picture of who these four people were who disappeared without a trace from their little blue house in Nanup in 2007.
Chantelle McDougall was 27 years old when she and her six-year-old daughter, Leela, were last seen in Nanup in WA Southwest with Leela's father and cult leader, Simon Cadwell, and a lodger, Tony Popich.
What I've heard so far is unsettling and has only left me with more questions. People remember Chantelle as a quiet, shy, but happy young mum. But that's totally at odds with the bizarre encounters people had with her partner, Simon Cadwell. It's like they belong to two different stories. I'm trying to reconcile these two versions of Chantelle's life to work out which is the real Chantelle, or maybe how one became the other, which is how I come to be sitting down with Donna. Because she has a glimpse into a key moment when a bubbly young drama-loving student became something else.
And that's when all the things started, you know, falling into place in my brain. Yeah, I had to sit with it for a hot minute.
I'm Dominique Bayens, and this is episode 2 of Expanse, the Nanup 4, Selling Snake Oil. It's taken a while of back and forward, but finally, Donna and I meet in person. With bubblegum pink hair, combat boots and a nose ring, I'm impressed by how cool she is. Usually with this sort of thing, you greet people with a smile and a handshake, but Donna and I hug straight away. Nervous small talk quickly turned into enthusiastic conversation about entering baking competitions in country ag shows, and why John Farnham's You're the Voice is one of the greatest Australian songs of all time. She's the type of person I want to be friends with. But we aren't meeting to talk about Lemon Slice or Aussie Dad Rock. I'm asking her to tell me about something that happened decades ago that still plays on her mind. Back in 1998, Donna was out of high school, living in Melbourne, studying music. One day she had some free time from uni work, so she hopped on the tram and headed to one of the busiest streets of Melbourne.
And I was going up to the top of Bourke Street and I saw her. It was literally, we'd just crossed paths. But it was just one of those chants, like, "Oh my God, Chantelle!"
Donna had no idea Chantelle had also moved to Melbourne.
It was still like old Chantelle, smiley, loud laughing, you know, that sort of thing. And it was a lot of like, "What are you doing here? What are you, you know, da 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 da."
Donna had first met Chantelle 3 years before, in 1995, when she was asked to show this new girl around high school, Chantelle McDougall.
I just remember her being really smiley and friendly. They're the only two words that I can kind of think of. And sunshiny.
It's that same sunshiny smile that caught Donna's attention again now.
She was a little bit goofy, but that was all of us as well, which is why I think, you know, she felt comfortable with our group of friends.
It wasn't that long ago they were sharing sleepovers, afternoons spent at the Wodonga Shopping Plaza and weekends at the local Weir. They'd last seen each other at the end of school when it was like they had the whole world at their feet.
It was scary, but it was so exhilarating. And it was confusing because when you're 17, 18, you're still discovering yourself and who you are and what you want.
I imagine Chantelle here, leaving school alongside Donna, having the same feeling of fear and exhilaration as her post-school life opened up before her. In high school, the two shared a love of the arts, drama and music. So they start catching up on how they're each chasing down their dreams. As the two friends start to fill each other in on their lives and what they've been up to, Chantelle told Donna she had a job as a live-in nanny, looking after a baby boy.
I was like, oh, amazing. Like, that's a really cool job. And I remember thinking that it's something that she would have been really good at because she would have been great with kids.
Then Chantelle started telling Donna about the father, her employer, Simon Cadwill.
That's when I started feeling the unease creep in and started thinking like, oh, this is weird.
In the years she'd known her, Chantelle had been light-hearted, a little naive maybe, but what 17-year-old isn't? In fact, the overwhelming sense of teenage Chantelle that I got from Donna is just this sunshiny, fun-loving, normal teen girl. Not particularly interested in boys, a delightful loud laugh, a little quirky. Chantelle had never struck her as being gullible before, but now she's got this glazed look and seems enamoured with this man.
I'd not heard her talk about boys like that through high school. I was trying to listen to her, but I remember that I had a voice running in my head going, this isn't right. This is really weird. What is she talking about? Who is this man? Like, what? Oh, is she in love with him? She seems like she's in love with him. Hang on, are you nannying for him? Like, what's... And I remember feeling really confused and just sort of wanting to back away a little bit.
Donna had never been uneasy with Chantelle before. From the moment she'd walked into Donna's class in grade 10, Chantelle had been so comfortable, so easy to be friends with. But then, next to the hurrying pedestrians and passing trams on Bourke Street, Chantelle told Donna about a book this man had written.
That's when the alarm bells went. It was really difficult to grasp what she was saying. I remember it being like, this is really weird.
By now, Donna's totally lost. Her Chantelle never seemed to even have an interest in religion. Shakespeare maybe, but not spirituality.
I think what twigged for me was when she alluded to him having followers.
Donna's really weirded out. And there's one word that pops into her head.
I just remember thinking like, oh my God, is she in a cult? I remember just wanting to kind of leave the conversation because I almost had this feeling that if I stay, she's going to say, why don't you come over and read some of this book with me? So straight away, my protective instinct kind of went up, which was really strange because I'd never feel that around her at all. You know, I came up with some excuse, I'm sure. I think we hugged and I said, well, let's catch up.
Donna ran straight home and told her housemate, Jess, the same school friend who sent her that news article a decade later. The next time Donna would see Chantelle's face was with a red bindi on her forehead under a news headline.
And it's heartbreaking because of the way I felt at the time, which was, to be honest, like, I need to back away here, you know? If I was older and if I was who I am now, I would have grabbed her and said, come with me. I'm taking you away from him and let's go to a safe space.
I can hear the nervousness in Donna's laugh here,
But when you're young back then, you know, it's just a stupid thing that we were all doing. Do you know what I mean? Like, all of us went on stupid paths, I guess, and did silly things. So at the time, I guess that was her thing. I'd never thought in a million years it would lead to where it has now. Never.
I think all of us know that feeling that Donna carries, the weight of missed opportunities that you can only see in the rearview mirror. It's the same feeling Diane shared with me right at the end of our chat. I'm starting to hear it a lot. People learning how to live with the choices they made. Everyone wishing they could do something differently, but they can't because they only knew what they knew at the time. Despite what Donna says, that she just got this overwhelming feeling that Chantelle had got tied up in a cult, I can't tell if what I've heard says cult or just a bit of a dick of a boyfriend. When I think about a cult, I imagine something that's bigger, more people, ceremonies and white robes. Not four people living in a little blue house and an early keyboard warrior with a web page and a forum. I've found someone who I think might help me unpick this. Raphael Aron, who spent almost four decades working with people who've been in cults, helping them get out, supporting them after.
It bothered me that children can suddenly disappear or have no contact at all with family.
He first got interested as a psychology student volunteering at a crisis phone line. He got a few calls from parents who had children who'd been drawn into cults.
So I did something rather unusual. I took time out of my studies and joined some of these organisations to find out what they were and what they were doing.
And Raphael is interested in the Nanup case. He's been following it for years, trying to make sense of it. And he knows a lot about cults, even authored a handful of books on the subject. When I asked Raphael to try and explain Simon Cadwell's beliefs, he's not really able to, even though he's studied it. I've also spent a lot of time trying to wrap my head around his, frankly, pretty convoluted and bizarre ideas. Those ramblings on different planes of existence and societal downfall, of ascending the spiritual path through an end of days. Honestly, there's references to aliens, the Matrix, lots of other theologies. It's a bit of a jumble. I know Simon Cadwell was up all night on the internet, posting on forums and his webpage. I've gone back through the web archives to find every trace I can of what he was doing. And let me tell you, going back to early 2000s internet is quite a time. Everyone my age had a MySpace account or MSN Messenger, and chat rooms made it really easy to talk to strangers on the other side of the globe.
He had a following of some several hundred people around the world on the net.
The website is vast. It almost seems like some web of consciousness, every thought posted. It's not entirely clear who wrote it either. It doesn't clearly say by Simon Cadwell anywhere. There are a lot of references to a vague we. It feels like the author's hiding behind the ambiguity, or maybe using it to seem more significant, more powerful. Or, listening to Raphael, maybe that ambiguity is actually a means to draw people in.
One of the most significant differences is, with a religion, you know what you're getting yourself into, and with a cult, you don't, but you're entering blind and hoping that something's going to work out for you.
It's so easy to ask, why did Chantelle choose to get involved with this guy? But Raphael says it's not really a question of choice at all.
An informed decision requires two components or two aspects. One of them is the component of free choice, that the person has the ability to be able to make choices. And the other one is to have the information with which to make the choice. When you enter a cult, you've got free choice, but you don't have the information.
It wasn't just Chantelle. It seems like Simon Cadwell was drawing people in, with hints that you could reach a meaningful life and an enticing invitation into an elite group who alone had the truth. We've found emails from people who followed him, undertook correspondence courses offered by his Truth Fellowship, even travelled around the world to meet him, He seemed to go by the name Simon Caddy, or just Si online. And he was connecting to people in a way that was pretty new. I feel like in 2007, people approached online conversations without the heavy cynicism we do today. They were more open, less literate about the risks. And for the first time, people were able to get a sense of belonging with people just like them, all around the world. But it still seems like whatever persona Simon had online, in the real world, he didn't have some big band of followers. And it doesn't sound like he was out and about in Nanup spreading the divine word. In fact, from 2003 when they moved to Nanup, it seemed like Simon Cadwell was rarely seen outside the house, even more rarely seen in town, which is strange for Nanup.
A real country town where everybody knew everybody.
Kay Savory is a small, neatly dressed woman with a warm smile. She lives in a charming cottage on the edges of the Nanup town site.
It's one of those places that gets into your soul, really.
In Kay's house, it's like stepping back in time. Gorgeous sofas, old clocks, wooden cabinets. Her house looks like the set of a film from the 70s. The first time we met, before now, she struck me as the kind of woman who knows the people of Nanup and their secrets well. She'd share bits and pieces, but I also got the sense she'd hold information back when she felt a story wasn't hers to tell. But she has some pieces of the Nanup 4 puzzle, about how Chantelle and Simon interacted, what that dynamic was like. It took a bit of convincing for Kay to speak to me on tape, but eventually she agreed. But any video was a bridge too far. Noted. Microphones only. All right, well, let me just press record, Kay.
Yep.
Kay moved to Nanup in 1998 and knew right away she'd come to the right place. She already felt welcomed like a local. She was looking for work, and it turned out she wouldn't have to look too far. A couple who lived two doors down ran the liquor store.
I got talking to Debbie, who was the owner, and said, you know, if you ever need any help, just let me know. Her response is, what were you doing next Tuesday?
The thing about working at the only liquor store in a small town is you get to know the locals and their drinking habits pretty quickly.
You know which six-pack and which packet of smokes they wanted when they came in, so you could more or less have it on the counter for them. I'm a non-gossip person, but it's very easy to hear lots of gossip, usually about three different versions, so you never need to contribute.
Mornings in the shop were pretty cruisy for Kay. Afternoons were rush hour, in the country town sense, with a small but steady stream of customers rolling in after work to pick up their grog for the evening. One of those afternoons, Kay distinctly remembers four people she'd never met walking into the store.
I think Simon was the first one through the door. And he was quite tall too, because me being so short as well. And he had quite a presence, for sure.
Behind Simon came an olive-skinned man with dark hair and eyes, a woman in her 20s with mouse brown hair, and a little girl wearing a brightly coloured dress. Kay didn't know their names then, but they were Simon Cadwell, Tony Popich, Chantelle and Leela McDougall.
And I became a little bit wary quite early on.
What traits did you pick up?
That he's quite dominating, that he wanted to lead the conversation, really. He was the one that was going to decide what they were buying.
Kay can't remember what they bought, but she remembers the dynamic between them.
It wasn't comfortable.
Like Simon was the one in charge, the leader. After that first meeting, Kay would sometimes bump into Tony down at the local hardware and Chantelle in the main street looking, as she describes it, hippie-ish.
She had a gentleness about her. So even her appearance would have been that kind of soft, you know, nothing harsh about her at all.
But Kay rarely saw Simon.
Simon never seemed to be out and about trying to get a job, put it that way.
Simon was up all night on the internet. On the other hand, Chantelle was working multiple different jobs. Over time, doing everything from serving at the fish and chip shop, looking after a girl with disabilities, working at the pub, all the while single parenting Leela, who, according to her homeschool friend Diane, Simon had refused to help raise when he found out Chantelle was pregnant. Chantelle seemed to be pretty enterprising, coming up with ways to make a dollar, even trying to sell things from an online catalogue to locals. I mean, who doesn't need a tool to help you pull on your socks? One day she even put the hard word onto Kay to buy something. But Kay actually had a side hustle herself, with a sales business called Nutramedics. These kind of things were big in Australia around this time. I can remember my own mum hosting parties and buying makeup or skincare just like Nutramedics. It was usually women, in particular stay-at-home mums, and Kay was used to meeting mothers like Chantelle who wanted some financial independence.
I'd met a lot of women that had low self-esteem and were in quite confronting situations.
Kay had seen similar signs in other women that she saw in Chantelle. Worrying things. Like she didn't have much control over money or the way things were run in her world. Kay wanted to help Chantelle, this quiet, gentle woman. She hoped that by setting her up with Nutramedics, it might give Chantelle some more independence, freedom maybe. So Chantelle put the invite out to a group of Nanup women, while Kay packed her Nutramedics products into her ute and headed out to the Blue House to help Chantelle host her very first sales presentation. Inside the house, Kay felt uneasy.
I really didn't feel very comfortable, I would say. I picked up not a very good energy.
She went through a hallway and into a small living room with some comfortable-looking couches.
And that's where this massive television was, which was amazing. And I thought, why would anybody need a television that size in a room like this?
In a corner of the room, by a window, Kay set up a display of the products while Chantelle was in the kitchen preparing food. Then Simon came to the living room. He stood in the doorway and started firing questions at Kay.
He wanted to know what the product was and could it be that good and why did you have to sell it to people this way?
He didn't seem like a curious spouse. The way he was asking the questions was like he wanted a justification why this woman was in his house.
He came across with me as I'm in control of this. I thought, hang on, what's going on? I've got to be a bit careful here.
Kay didn't say much. Simon seemed angry and didn't move from the doorway.
He was stopping anybody coming in and he was stopping me going out. I felt like he stood over me, like he wasn't going to sit down and be below me in any situation.
Kay could feel her heart beating faster as Simon hammered her with questions about how much it would cost Chantelle and when she would start earning money.
Because I could feel that he wanted to be between me and Chantelle at that stage.
Simon eventually left the room. Chantelle came back in carrying snacks.
I said, oh, is Simon okay? And it was, he may not have slept well. That was the response I got. I thought, oh, okay, I'll be a bit careful here.
Kay got on with setting up for the coming sales party before people started arriving. Simon didn't appear again that day as a small group of Nanup women gathered and clucked over moisturisers and cleansers. Chantelle made her first sales. The afternoon was a success. But Kay couldn't shake that feeling of him standing over her and what might happen for Chantelle in that house.
I never saw him in the same light to me. I was the threat after that. So there was no interaction where I wasn't a threat.
K Kay's feeling about the dynamic that was happening here is hard to hear. Kay went back to the Blue House one final time to help Chantel pack up the orders. But the living room looked different this time. The computer and electrical cords had taken over, wires everywhere.
Which I thought then was really weird. Why is all this here?
Kay noticed Chantel seemed different that visit as well.
She was definitely quieter, more subdued. She wasn't quite so gregarious, I would say.
In the next 3 years in Nanup, before they went missing, Kay never spent time with Chantel again, and Chantel never placed another nootropics order. I can't help but think about what Kay's told me in the context of something else Raphael said. That isolation, lack of feedback outside the group, is a really dominant form of control, keeping away people or ideas that might challenge theirs.
Essentially, it's an organisation or a structure which denies people their autonomy, their independence of thought, their ability to make decisions and to be able to plot their own path in life. Everything is controlled to the point that people lose their own sense of identity, their own sense of self.
This actually brings to mind one of Simon's teachings, that the personality is all a construct. It's not real. And to achieve spiritual growth, you have to let go of your personality. And Chantel, who according to what I've heard, seemed to need his permission to go places, see people, start up a business.
One of the patterns of behaviour which is quite universal is secrecy. People not wanting to share what they're going into and what they belong to.
Once again, I can't help but think about the Nanup 4 when Raphael says this, hidden away in a remote corner of the country.
There was a small group of people enmeshed with each other to a point where there was no possibility of outside review or criticism. Small groups such as this one have a far greater effect and a far greater impact on the believers.
It seems counterintuitive, right? But he says that in big cults, the leader is some distant figure.
The members have never seen the leader. They've never had anything to do with the leader.
But in little groups like the Nanup 4, the presence of the leader is right there.
And the people being bombarded by his views about transitioning to a higher plane, all those sorts of things, they're living in this bubble, in this cocoon. So there's no other input other than the input that was being thrown at them every day from their leader. And I think that's a really important point. You don't have a frame of reference.
It's starting to make sense to me why Chantel seems to be described by so many people as really lovely, but hard to get close to. I've heard it first from Diane, now Kay. It seems like when someone started to get too close, Simon warned them off, and that Chantel was becoming more and more isolated. I feel like there are two people who would have had the best sense of whether this is the case and who might be able to fill me in on how Chantel got pulled into the orbit of doomsday truth-seeking, this truth fellowship. Chantel's parents, Leela's pa and nanny, Jim and Kath McDougall. I was never going to do this podcast unless they were on board.
Yeah, he just called me to say that they've had a big think and they're willing to be part of it. They are willing to try anything.
I'm pretty overwhelmed speaking to Jim. I can't imagine what it's like to go nearly 20 years not knowing where your daughter and granddaughter are. Jim and Kath live on the other side of the country in Victoria, but I've organised a day and a time and I'm going to visit them. It's time to hear from those closest to Chantel. Just how did Simon Cadwell pull her so far down the rabbit hole? I'm Dominique Bayens, host of Expanse, the Nanup 4. Please subscribe so you get every episode as they drop and leave a review wherever you're listening. It really helps others find us. If you can add to this story or have information you think might be important, please get in touch. This season of Expanse was developed in collaboration with ABC's regional WA team on Wadandi and Bibbulmun country. Sound design is by Grant Walter, who is also a producer, along with Megan Woods. with additional production and research by Jessica Hinchliffe, Kate Stevens and Louise Mylan. Our supervising producer is Pia Wursu. Executive producer is Blythe Moore.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.